The second day of the Satipatthana course is over. This evening, let us go through this course and understand in relation to the actual practice that we are doing. The name of the discourse is Maha Satipatthana Suttam. Suttam means discourse. It is said Maha Satipatthana. The word Maha means great, big. That means there is something smaller than this. And yes, there is another discourse given by Buddha on Satipatthana, which is smaller than this discourse. This discourse is Maha, bigger, because it deals with some more subjects in detail. Therefore, it is called Maha Satipatthana. Sati is awareness, a very important faculty of Dhamma, as we discussed yesterday. Sati is one of our indriyas, a faculty which one has to master, to develop in Dhamma. Sati is one of the bala, the forces, the strength, which one must develop to master Dhamma. Sati is one of the factors of enlightenment which one has to develop to get fully enlightened. Sati is also one of the Eightfold Noble Path, Samma Sati. Sati plays a very important role in the practice of Dhamma. The literal meaning of the word Sati is, and very commonly used nowadays in other languages of India, present languages of India, as Smriti, which means memory, remembrance. But when you practice Vipassana, there is no memory involved. You are not remembering something of the past. Here what you have to remember is, remember your object of meditation. That means the reality within the framework of the body, the reality pertaining to mind and matter. You should always remember that your mind does not wander away from this reality. That is, in that sense you can say, remembrance. But in a better way of understanding, let us say Sati means awareness, and this is what it is. You are aware. You can't be aware of the past, you can't be aware of the future. You can be aware of the present, the reality of this moment as it is. This is Sati. Patthana. One gets established. The word pa says extensively. You get established extensively. What extensively? That means it is not mere awareness. Along with that awareness, there is element of panya, element of wisdom. You are not merely aware of the truth pertaining to mind and matter, you are also aware of the nature of this truth pertaining to mind and matter, how it keeps on arising, passing away, arising, passing away. How it is a source of misery, how it is no I, no mind, how it is substanceless. All that has not to be understood merely at the intellectual level. with direct experience. And therefore, Patthana, Panya, the Bhavanamaya Panya is there. With your own direct experience, you develop your awareness with the wisdom which makes you understand the reality in its true nature, not just as it appears to be, not just as it seems to be, but in its true nature, and that is why it is Mahasatipatthana Suttam. And the discourse starts, Evam Me Suttam. This is what was heard by me. This was heard by me. These are not the words of Buddha. Somebody else says, this was heard by me. These are the words of someone else. There is a history behind it. And a very important history which a Vipassana meditator should know. At the ripened age of 80 years, when Buddha passed away, most of his students who were present at that time and who had reached the final goal of arhanthood, fully liberated, they understood the law of nature. Everyone who takes birth has to pass away. Whether one is Buddha or an ordinary person makes no difference. When time ripens, one has to pass away. But those who were not developed in Dhamma, they felt very sorry, very sad. Some of them even started crying. There was one person who felt very happy. An old monk, in age old, not in wisdom, he felt very happy. Oh good, this old man has passed away. All the time we were under his clutches, do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. Now we are free to do whatever we like. One of his teaching, Attahi Attano Natho, you are your own master, now I can be my own master. Wonderful. That shows that such elements had entered in the Sangha who were not interested in Dhamma. They just took robes because they found by entering the Sangha, becoming a monk in the name of Buddha will give them some status in the society. They can live a comfortable life. People will give more alms to them than they would have received otherwise. And they will get more respect. They were not interested in Dhamma. Now this person, I feel extremely grateful to this person, thankful to this person. Why? Because when he announced that wonderful Buddha has passed away, one of the chief disciples of Buddha, when he heard this, he thought, even today if there are such people, what is going to happen in the future? Later on, such elements will become predominant and they will just distort the teaching of Buddha in their own way. And actually this happened also after some time. How to save it? The words of Buddha, the teachings of Buddha. He became enlightened at the age of 35 and he passed away at the age of 80 for 45 years, day and night. Hardly 2 or 3 hours he will lie down for sleep, which is not sleep, awareness, and equanimity, awareness and wisdom to give rest to the body. Rest of the time, he was just teaching Dhamma. He taught, he gave 82,000 sermons. Another 2,000 sermons were given by leading disciples of Buddha who were arhats. So in all, 84,000 sermons. Now this elderly disciple by the name of Mahakassapa, he decides that all the teaching of Buddha must be compiled together. And we should try to preserve it for the coming generations so that people do not change it. Quite possible later on, persons like this fellow will put their own words in the mouth of Buddha and they will say, Buddha said so. They will take freedom from certain disciplines which are very essential for the progress of Dhamma and they will say, Buddha gave this permission and things like that, which after a few centuries it did happen. We must preserve the actual words of Buddha. While there are people who are direct disciples of Buddha, who are eyewitness to Buddha's teaching, who have heard Buddha's teaching, so he decided to call a meeting of 500 arhats, fully liberated persons, elderly persons, elderly monks. Let us sit together and recite all the teachings of Buddha, compile them, and announce it as authenticated. This is just immediately after the death of Buddha. If this is compiled after 100 years or 200 years, people may accept, may not accept. It should be done now. So this Mahakassapa, a very wise person, he made this decision. He gathered 500 elderly arhats. Well, even a few handful could do that. But just to impress the people of that time and people of future, 500 of them joined together. And they read out every word. They recited every word of Buddha. And then gave it a seal of authenticity. When he selected 500, somebody said, no, this congregation, this gathering, will not be a perfect gathering unless we have Ananda as one of the members. So have only 499, let Ananda be a member to make it 500. Now who is this Ananda? Ananda was cousin brother of Buddha, Gautama the Buddha, was born on the same day as Gautama the Buddha was born. He was with him in the childhood. He was with him during the youth. And when Buddha renounced the householder's life, went out and became enlightened, then he was one amongst many family members who also renounced their householder's life and joined him. And since then, he was with him all the time. When Buddha started teaching, the number of followers started spreading. The work started spreading. Naturally, he wanted some assistant. A number of assistants came near him to help him, to serve him. But quite a few of them came with some motives. The motive was, here is a fully enlightened person. He is against these miracles. He has the power of miracles, no doubt. But he doesn't want his followers to show miracles. If I am very close to him, I will be fortunate to see some of the miracles being performed by him. Such motive was there with some of these attendants, personal attendants. Buddha had refused to answer certain questions, philosophical questions. He said they are useless, meaningless. Don't waste your time on them. Now some attendants thought that he doesn't want to say anything on this subject in public, but perhaps if I am very close, then he may explain. I better be very close. I better serve. Such people could not stay with him longer. Sooner or later they have to leave. People keep on changing. And as he grew in age, he became 55 years old, getting old. So people thought that there must be a stable personal assistant with him. He also accepted, yes, some responsible, stable personal assistant, a private secretary is necessary. Many of the elderly monks were very eager to take that post to serve him so closely. But Buddha had a liking towards Ananda. And Ananda is mum. He doesn't say a word. People know that if Ananda says yes, Buddha will accept him. Ananda does not say yes. When they persuaded him, he said, I got my terms. If Buddha accepts my terms, then I will be his personal assistant. Somebody putting terms before Buddha to be a personal assistant. What are your terms? He put up some 7 or 8 terms, and out of that one was very healthy terms, very wholesome terms. One of that was that whenever you give any discourse anywhere, if I am present, perfectly all right. If by any reason I am not present and you give a discourse, then when you come back, you must repeat that discourse to me. Buddha accepted all his conditions, including this. So from the age of 55 to the age of 80, 25 years, every discourse that Buddha gave was heard by this person, Ananda. Even the discourses before that also were heard by him. But these 25 years, he was like a shadow with Buddha. Every discourse was heard by him. And here was a wonderful person. He had such a wonderful faculty from some of his good paramis of the past, and also due to his practice of this life, he had developed the faculty of memory. He hears something once, enough. It is like tape recorded, what you are doing here. It is like computerized. Anytime you ask anything, he will just repeat word to word. This was his wonderful faculty. So people said, if Ananda is not there, something is missing. He should be there. But he can't be there because this is a gathering of arhants. And he is not an arhant. Understand, Ananda served Buddha for 25 years, so close to him. Ananda was his cousin brother, so close to him. Ananda was his great devotee, so close to him. And yet he could not become arhant. He was only sotapanna, the first stage of liberation, when one experiences the nibbanic stage, the stage beyond mind and matter, for the first time. Very important stage, but still, it is the first stage of liberation. After that, you have got higher stage, sagdagami. You got higher stage than that, anagami. And then you have the highest stage of arhan. And here he is, having reached only the first stage. This again, for us to understand that Buddha cannot liberate anybody. Each individual has to work out one's own salvation. He had no time. He was just serving Buddha all the time. He could not progress. Although he knew Dhamma perfectly well, not one, not two, thousands of persons whom he taught became arhants. And he himself was not arhant. And in this gathering, how can a non-arhant be there? So Mahakasapa goes to him and tells him, well look, Venerable Ananda, you are very busy serving Buddha. Now Buddha is no more. You know the technique so well, because your own disciples have reached the stage of arhanthood. Now you've got so much time, why not work? Become arhant, so that you can come in our gathering, join our gathering. This is the aim that we have of this gathering, and you will be a very great asset to it. Ananda was very glad, wonderful. Yes, I didn't have much time before, now I've got time, nothing else. All time is there at my disposal. Wait for a few days. I will practice. I will become arhant and join you. And he started working. Started working very vigorously. I must become an arhant. I must become an arhant. When he was teaching others, he used to say, "Don't develop ego. This ego is dangerous for you. It will be a big obstacle." And when he practices himself, this ego becomes important. I must become arhant. I must become arhant. Many a time the teacher forgets what he teaches others. When he practices himself, he forgets his own teaching, and this is what happened. He didn't move an inch. Now tomorrow they have to start this conference. And Mahakasapa comes to Ananda and tells him, "Well, look, we have waited so long. We can't be waiting. There are 499 persons waiting for the conference to start. By tomorrow morning, you are arhant or no arhant. If you are no arhant, I take somebody else. I will start my work. If you are arhant, you are welcome." "Yes, yes, yes, one night more. I will try this one night more." And again tried. "I must become arhant. This is the only night for me. I must become arhant." The first part of the night, the middle part of the night, the last part of the light passes away. The sun is rising. He is so exhausted. He doesn't cry. At least this good quality. He's not successful. And that much he knows, that one should not cry when one is not successful. He accepts the fact. "Well, I accept the fact. I am not an arhant. Now let me take rest. I am not an arhant. I am just a sotapanna. A sotapanna." He was with the reality of this moment as it is. When he was aiming for something to become arhant, his mind was always in the future, not in the present. And now, "I am not an arhant." He accepts this reality. "I am just a sotapanna. I am taking rest. I am taking rest." And observing the sensations inside, arising, passing, arising, passing. This is the way of taking rest for good meditators. "I am taking rest." And before his head could reach the pillow, he was an arhant. How much effort, if you make overexertion, then you lose the balance of your mind. Middle path, Neither there must be one extreme of laxity that you don't do anything. Nor your effort must be so extreme that you lose the balance of your mind. And Ananda becomes Arahant. And he joins the confidence. Now questions are asked to Ananda. What did Buddha say? All the teachings of Buddha were compiled and three divisions were made. That is why they are called Tipitaka. Ti means three. Pitaka means baskets. In those days, the books were kept in baskets. So these three groups of the teaching of Buddha. The one is Sutta Pitaka, where is long or short discourses to the public were accumulated, compiled. Then Vinaya Pitaka, his discourses specially to the monks, the nuns, about their discipline, about their sila. For householders, five sila, good enough. But for a monk, for a nun, over 200 silas. And this is what this old man resented. Oh, so much restriction on us. All those instructions to the monks, to the nuns, were compiled in Vinaya Pitaka. And then the third, called Abhidhamma, higher Dhamma. Dhamma, law of nature, the truth. Deeper truth, which it is not easy to understand by ordinary person. One has to meditate very deeply to understand it. This is an analytical study of the entire mind-matter phenomena, the entire field. In such detail it is explained in Abhidhamma. Starting from the apparent truth to the ultimate truth, all the details of the reality pertaining to the matter, all the details of the reality pertaining to the mind, all the details pertaining to the reality pertaining to the mental factors, the mental concomitants, the mental contents. The matter in the language of those days was called rupa. The mind was called chitta. And the mental contents, chetasika. Fully explained how they interact, how one starts influencing the other, how the matter stimulates the arising of the mind. How the mind arises, stimulates the arising of the matter. How the mind stimulates the arising of the mind. How the matter stimulates the arising of the matter. All these interconnections and the currents and cross currents going on deep inside are fully explained. They cannot be understood just by reading Abhidhamma. Only by the practice of Vipassana at a very deep stage such things become clear. That is the third pitaka, Abhidhamma pitaka. All these three. So far as Sutta pitaka and Abhidhamma pitaka were concerned, Ananda was asked questions about that. So far as Vinaya pitaka was concerned, another arhant by the name of Upali, he was perfect in the discipline of monks and nuns, he was asked questions. Now this comes in the Sutta Pitaka. And Ananda says, this is what I heard. Evam me sutam. In many of these suttas, we find the suttas start with these words, evam me sutam. This is what I heard. He heard directly from the mouth of Buddha. This is what I heard. And then he is good enough to give us a description of the situation. The situation in which this discourse was given. When it was given. to whom it was given, in what circumstances it was given, and how it was given, all that is sort of preamble he gives there, and then the actual sutta starts. So now, that explanation as to where it was given, and he says, ekam samayam bhagava, at one time, bhagava means the enlightened one, the Buddha, ekam samayam bhagava, kurusu viharati, viharati was living. The word viharati is not used for ordinary lay people in the language of India. Viharati is used for very enlightened persons and even those who are on the path of enlightenment, like the monks, the nuns, or even lay people who are practicing Dhamma, this word is used, viharati. So Buddha was at that time living, staying in Kuru. Kuru was one of the 16 states of northern India of those days. It is somewhere near today's Delhi, near Punjab, adjacent to Rajasthan, which is now called Haryana. A state which is now called Haryana was called Kuru in those days. And it was here that this discourse was given. Ekam samayam bhagava kuru su viharati, and in Kuru, in this state also, where kammasa dhammanam kuru nang nigamo, a small district of this state by the name of kammasa dhamma. This was the name of this place where this discourse was given. Tatrakho bhagava bhikkhu amanteshi bhikkhabhuti. Buddha called those who were present, called them as, O bhikkhus. And bhadanteti te bhikkhu bhagavato pachasosung. And those bhikkhus, they replied back, bhadante, yes, venerable sir. Now, two things to understand. This important sermon was given in Kuru. Buddha had very high words to say about the people of Kuru. And not only Buddha, later on also, in other traditions also, Kuru is taken as a place where people, most of the people, live the life of morality. In another tradition, Brahmanic tradition, we have this important scripture, Gita. It starts with these words, dharma kshetre kuru kshetre, the field of Dhamma, the field of Kuru. It talks of Kuru, which is the field of Dhamma. Why it is taken with such high regard? Buddha explains in one of his other discourses. Long ago, when Buddha was not Buddha, in his previous lives, he had the seed of Buddhahood. He was developing his paramis to become Buddha, the 10 paramis. And from life to life, he was living a good life to develop his own parami. In one of the lives, he was king of Kuru. Now the people of Kuru, right from the king to the smallest person, they all observe sila. Those were the days when what you call Panchasila now, the 5 precepts, what you call Sila Dhamma, the Dhamma of Sila, morality. In the language of those days of India, it was called Kuru Dhamma, the Dhamma of Kuru. That means the people of Kuru have got this nature. This is their nature. They live the life of morality. Everyone lives the life of morality. Quite peculiar. At that time, the would-be Buddha, the Bodhisatta, was the ruler of this country, Kuru. And it so happened that one of the states of India of those days, which is today called Orissa, in those days it was called Kalinga, there was famine, drought, year after year, year after year. People became very miserable. And there was a belief that these famines come when people don't live the life of morality. And people don't live the life of morality when the ruler is not living the life of morality. So the elders of this state, this kingdom, went to the king, to the ruler, and said, "Sir, there is something wrong. Look, year after year, famine is there. Something should be done. Our people should live the life of morality. And this cannot happen unless you start living the life of morality. So take 5 precepts. And let all the public, all the people of the state take 5 precepts and observe." And to take 5 precepts, it is important that it is taken from somebody who is perfect in 5 precepts. So from whom you should take 5 precepts, from whom we should take 5 precepts, we better approach the ruler of Kuru. He is a perfect person. And all his people, all his subjects, they are living the life of morality. The 5 precepts are there. So 2 ambassadors were sent to the kingdom of Kuru. 2 Brahmin ambassadors. They reached there and told the whole story to the ruler. "We are in difficulty. Please give us these 5 precepts. You write it on a slate and we will take that. And on your behalf, we will read out to the teacher, and then we will read out to all the people. And they will start practicing, and we will be out of misery." The king refuses. He says, "Yes, I have been living a perfect life of sila, but there is one slight mistake which I committed. One slight mistake. So I am not perfect." And he asked his ambassadors, "You better go to him." He asked them to go to his mother, elderly mother. She is perfect. They go to the mother. Mother says, no. "There's one little mistake I did in my life. You better go to the queen, the chief queen." And they go to the chief queen. And she says, no. "It's one little mistake I have done." Then go to the younger brother of the king. And then go to the prime minister of the state. Then go to this revenue minister of the state. Then you go to this priest, chief priest of the state. Then you go to this chief officer of the state, revenue officer of the state. Then you go to the chief trader of the state, businessman of the state. And like this, they went on, going to different. Everyone says, "There was slight mistake in my life, slight mistake in my life." And coming down, the charioteer. Go to the charioteer. They went to the chariot. He says, "No, some mistake." Then go to the watchman who takes care of the gate. "Some mistake." Like this, from the king down, everybody are so very much careful about their precepts. And the mistakes that they have said, we won't go in all those details, it will take time, are so flimsy. Like for example, the king, he says, "I made a mistake." "What mistake?" He says, "Once I was showing my art of archery. I'm wonderful in using the bow and the arrow. And I was just showing this to my people, my subject. And one arrow which I threw, it went and fall in the pond nearby. And when it fell in the pond, it went inside and didn't come up. It didn't come up. That shows It must have pierced some fish there, and with the weight of the dead fish, it remained. It didn't come up. Well, who knows whether really it pierced a fish, or it might have gone in the depth of the mud at the bottom and would not have come up, or some other obstacle. But he doubts, perhaps by my action, one fish would have been killed. And like that, people are so careful about their Shila. Now this is a country where from the past tradition, people are careful about their morality. So this discourse does not talk about morality. Morality base is there. He is talking to the people of that country. Base of morality is essential. But base is base. The gap between one Buddha and the another Buddha, this is what happens. When a Buddha arises, an enlightened person arises, he gives complete Dhamma, the totality of it, pure Dhamma. There is nothing which can be taken out of it. There is no trace of impurity that has to be taken out. There is nothing wanting which has to be added. Keval paripunnam, keval parishuddham, the Dhamma that is taught by an enlightened person is so complete and so pure. But as time passes, this complete pure Dhamma becomes incomplete. Certain important portions get disappearing. They disappear. And the most difficult ones, they start disappearing earlier. The Panya starts disappearing. Vipassana starts disappearing. The Panya which remains is Panya, only intellectual Panya. People keep on talking about Panya, keep on talking about wisdom, but the practice, the Bhavanamaya Panya gets lost. The Samadhi, the purer part of Samadhi goes away. The concentration with some verbalization or visualization or imagination, that will remain. But the Samadhi which develops with the awareness of the reality, that passes away. Then what remains is Sila. And now that Sila becomes so important to people, yes, it is important, but the other factors, the other steps of Dhamma are lost, then more importance is given to Sila. People start going to extreme. They start stretching the Sila. One Sila or the other is stretched to such an extent that the mind becomes unbalanced. They can't practice proper Samadhi, they can't practice proper Panya. We find same thing happening in today's India also. There are sections of the society where they stretch one Sila or the other to such an extent that they lose the balance of their mind. They can't practice proper Samadhi, they can't practice proper Panya. This is what Buddha kept on condemning. He said, Sila vat paramasya. Paramasya is attachment. Attachment to such a great extent that by observing this particular Sila, I am going to get liberation. I will be liberated just by observing this one particular Sila. And that makes the people so unbalanced. They don't practice Samadhi, they don't practice Vipassana, they don't practice Panya, and they get stuck only with Sila because they have stressed it so much. Vat, you take a vow, and you become so attached to this vow, and again you stretch it such an extreme. Nothing wrong in Sila, it's so important. Nothing wrong in Vat, taking vow, it is so important. Like you take a vow, after midday you won't take any meals. It's a good vow, it helps you in your meditation. Or at times you take a vow, you will fast for the whole day. Nothing wrong, it keeps you healthy. But then people start stretching it to such an extent. You fasted for one day, I'll fast for 2 days. I'm a bigger Dhamma person than you are. 2 days, I'll fast for 5 days. 5 days, I'll fast for 10 days, 20 days, 1 month. Stretching, stretching, stretching. The essence gets lost. The purpose gets lost. One gets so much a taste to this sila and to this vata that the other important parts of dhamma like samadhi, like panya, is lost to the country. And this was the situation of Kuru at that time. People are good in sila. Well, it is wrong to stretch it to that extent, but still those people who observe sila are definitely much, much better than those who have no sila. Their life is without sila. So these people are much better. Now these people will understand dhamma better because their base is good. Although something is wanting, and that wanting can be fulfilled by this technique which is being taught now. So this is the place, Kuru, where the morality, base of morality is there, and this is the place where people will understand the details of this technique much better, and he gives his technique there. And then when he says, O bhikkhus, come. Bhikkhu, what bhikkhu? In the ordinary language of India, bhikkhu means a monk, a recluse. But here it doesn't mean that. Not only here, in all his teachings, when it says bhikkhu, one who is practicing the teaching of dhamma, he may be a layman, he may be a householder. Anyone makes no difference. A man, a woman, a monk, a nun, a householder, man, woman, anyone from all these four groups can be a bhikkhu. So he talks, when he calls bhikkhu, he calls bhikkhu to a meditator. O meditators. And then he says, now here it starts his discourse. Ekayano ayam bhikkhave maggu. Ekayano. One and only path. Ekayano maggu ayam bhikkhave. What maggu? Sat. Sattanang visuddhiya, to purify the individuals. That means to purify the mind of the individual. Mental purification is the real purification. One may keep on washing one's body at the external level. This is not the purification of the individual. The mind should get purified. Sattanang visuddhiya. Then, what this purification does? Sok paridevanang samatikkamaya. Sok. Great grief. Mental grief. Very deep grief is sok. Sok paridevanang. And with this mental grief inside, it manifests itself at the physical level. One starts crying, weeping, lamenting. Samatikkamaya. This path will help the meditator to transcend this, to cross this over. As you practice this technique, no more crying, no more weeping, no more lamentation. And such deep griefs, they come on the surface and pass away. You pass over them. And then, dukkha domanasyanang athangamaya. Dukkha domanasya. Again, domanasya is the unpleasant feeling of the mind. Mind feels unhappy. It's domanasya. And dukkha, the sensations on the body, unpleasant sensations on the body is dukkha. Unpleasant feeling of the mind is domanasya athangamaya. To eradicate that, to finish that, this technique will help. You start from the very gross reality, very gross miseries, and you come to the subtler miseries, subtler miseries, subtler misery, till you eradicate total miseries, no more misery. When you are too much in mental grief, then you cry and weep. This is so gross. Both of them are so gross. then the misery of mind is still there. Some unpleasantness is there in the mind, domanasang, and there is sensation on the body which is unpleasant. That also goes away by this technique. Then nyayasya adhigamaye, to help one to walk on the path of truth, nyayasya. If you don't walk on the path of truth, if you work with imagination, then the previous thing, whatever I said, cannot be attained. Your misery from the deepest level cannot be taken out if you just work with some kind of contemplation, some kind of imagination. Then your surface of the mind is working to purify itself. Surface of the mind gets purified, no doubt, by that. But the deepest level of the mind, where you have these deep-rooted complexes, they can't come out. They will come out only when you start observing the reality as it is pertaining to mind and matter and the interconnection between the two, and you keep on observing, from the gross apparent truth to deeper, till you reach the ultimate truth, the subtlest ultimate truth pertaining to the matter, subtlest ultimate truth pertaining to the mind, pertaining to the mental contents. And thus you are working with the truth that you experience, not the truth experienced by a Buddha. The truth experienced by Buddha can liberate only one person, and that person was Buddha only who was liberated. He can only show the path. Each individual has to walk over the path step by step and must experience the truth oneself directly, from the grossest reality to the subtlest reality. So that is called nyayasya adhigamaya. Gamaya, you walk on it. Adhigamaya, high road. You are walking on the high road of liberation. Nibbanasya satchikiriyaya. And where it takes your observation of the truth from the grossest apparent reality, moving towards subtler, but truth, no imagination, subtler, subtlest reality pertaining to the entire mind-matter field, and then you transcend and witness something which is beyond mind and matter, and which is called Nibbana. The entire field of mind and matter is the field where things keep on arising, passing. Sometimes arising at a very gross level, it arises, seems to stay for some time and then passes away. It arises, seems to stay for some time and passes away. As you go deeper, you notice that it arises, passes with great rapidity. Even at the subtlest level, there is some oscillation going on. Arising, passing is going on. So entire field of mind and matter is the field of arising, passing. This is what one has to experience. Not just accept it at the intellectual level. One has to experience it. Then a stage comes where you transcend this field of mind and matter. You transcend this field of anicca, arising, passing. And something is experienced, the ultimate truth, which is beyond mind and matter, where nothing arises, nothing passes away. But no words can explain it. Because this is the experience where all your sense organs stop working. When somebody is in that stage of Nibbana, while practicing Vipassana, one comes to the stage where one has transcended the entire field of mind and matter and is now experiencing Nibbana. This experience of Nibbana is beyond mind and matter, beyond the entire sensorium. All the six sense organs stop working. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body and mind. They stop working. This is experience beyond the sensual field, sensory field. And coming back from that, this experience may be for a few moments, this experience can be for a few seconds, can be for a few minutes, can be for a few hours, it depends. But when you come back again, In this field, the sensorium field, the field of mind and matter, you are a changed person altogether. But you can't explain what you experienced. How will you explain? You don't have the tools to explain. That experience was experienced beyond the sense organs, and it cannot be explained by these sense organs, and it cannot be understood by the people with the sense organs. It has to be experienced by each individual. The entire path is a path of experience. Experience. If you play the game of intellect, then of course you can discuss it. You give a big description of it because you understood at the intellect level. And you try to explain again at the intellect level. And people also try to understand at the intellect level. That doesn't work. The entire path must be experience, experience. That is why the Dhamma, the six qualities of Dhamma that he gave, the last and the most important quality of Dhamma, pachyatam veditabbo. The Dhamma must be experienced by each individual within oneself, directly by oneself, pachyatam veditabbo. You have to experience it yourself. Vedana is experiencing veditabbo. You experience the truth within yourself, and as you start observing and feeling and experiencing the truth within yourself, from the grosses, you keep on moving, moving, moving. You explore the entire field of mind and matter, and then you experience something which is beyond mind and matter. So the entire field of observing the truth personally at the experiential level. Now when he says, ekayano maggo, to people who are not walked on this path deeply, or who are not walked at all, outsiders, they will feel uncomfortable. What this person says, ekayano maggo, this is the only path. This is very narrow-minded outlook. There can be so many paths. Why only this path? Why he says this is the only path? But those who walk over the path, it becomes so clear. What is path after all? Law of nature is universal. Law of nature is not different for the followers of Buddha. Law of nature is not different for those who call themselves Hindus, or those who call themselves Christian, or those who call themselves Muslims. Law of nature is law of nature. And he wants us to experience the law of nature, to understand the law of nature, the truth, the law which is applicable to one and all, the Dhamma which is applicable to one and all, the nature, the characteristic, like the characteristic of fire is to burn. Anyone who places his hand on the fire is bound to get burned. The fire will not discriminate. Fire will not see that the hand is of the hand of a Hindu or a Buddhist or a Christian or an Australian or a New Zealander or an American. Anyone who puts the hand on the fire is bound to get burned. I don't like burning my hand. So I better keep my hand away from the fire. This is law of nature. This is Dhamma. This is what it teaches. This is universal. Because the law is universal, therefore the path has to be universal. It can't be sectarian. And universal path can be only one. Because the law is only one. Buddha or no Buddha, the law is law. It remains. Even when somebody does not become Buddha, the law of nature is there. It remains. Even when somebody becomes a Buddha, the law of nature is there. And even after Buddha, the law of nature is there. Like someone by the name of Newton discovered this law of gravity. Newton or no Newton, this law of gravity was there even before Newton. Even at the time of Newton, even after Newton, it was good that somebody discovered it and placed before it. We make use of it. The law of relativity. Somebody by the name of Einstein found it out. It was there, whether Einstein or no Einstein. Even before Einstein, the law of relativity was there at the time of Einstein, and even after Einstein. Similarly, Dhamma is there. If this is there, this result is bound to come. Law of nature. If you do not want this result to come, then this should be avoided. Law of nature. Ekayano maggo. You keep this and this, and you don't want the result. Not possible. Ekainomaggo in the sense that you follow the law of nature, and law of nature is one and only one. Two parts of hydrogen, one part of oxygen. This results in moisture, in water. Law of nature. This is law, this is Dhamma. If there is no oxygen, in a planet there is no oxygen or no hydrogen, there is no water, no moisture. Law of nature. This is what you will understand the whole path as you proceed. You have worked already and you will work much deeper. That if this happens, this result is bound to come. And if you don't want this result, because the result is not pleasant to you, it's misery, and you want to come out of misery, then this should not happen. You have to remove. You have to remove the cause, and the result is automatically removed. Without removing the cause, somebody feels that I will get liberated from the fruit of this cause, the unpleasant fruit of this cause, the bitter fruit of this cause, because somebody, some supernatural power will be very kind to me, that in spite of all the impurities in my mind, this person will liberate me. Well, this is just wishful thinking. It does not happen. One has to work, and this is the way, the law, the nature, that you have to eradicate your impurities, you have to eradicate your present habit pattern full of ignorance, where you keep on generating sankharas, and as a result of which you keep on suffering from misery. This pattern of your habit at a very deep level of the mind has to be changed. And this is what is being done. That is why ekayanomaggo, ekayanomaggo. And what is this ekayanomaggo? He says, yadidam, and this is chattaro satipatthana, the four types of satipatthana. Establishment of awareness with wisdom in four ways. And what are these four ways? Katame chattaro. What are these four ways? Ida bhikkave bhikkhu. O bhikkhus, O meditators. Here a meditator, what he does? Kaye kayanupassi viharati. Atapi sampajano satima. Vineya loke abhijja domanassam. One witnesses the reality of the body within the body. Kaye kaya anupassi. Atapi, very ardently, diligently. Sampajano, with wisdom. The wisdom of arising, passing. Satima, with awareness. One is fully aware with wisdom the truth pertaining to the body by observing the body truth within the body itself. That means no imagination. You are directly experiencing the truth about your body within your body. And so also, vedanasu vedananupassi viharati. You are observing the truth of these body sensations within body sensations. You are not imagining them. You are experiencing them. You have got direct experience of that. Vedanasu vedananupassi viharati atapi sampajano satima. Very diligently, with awareness, with wisdom. Vineya loke abhijja domanassam. Keeping oneself away from craving and aversion towards the phenomena, the mind matter phenomena, which is called loke. Chitte chittanupassi viharati. Similarly, observing the reality of mind within the mind. And dhamme su dhammanupassi viharati. The mental contents, the law of nature, the reality pertaining to the law of mind and matter. Within this law, within the mental contents, you observe the mental contents within the mental contents. Again, atapi sampajano satima, with full awareness, full wisdom, and working diligently. Vineya loke abhijja domanassan, keeping yourself free from craving, free from aversion. We'll go in details of this paragraph tomorrow. In the meantime, understand that all the four satipatthanas, observing the truth pertaining to the body, observing the truth pertaining to the sensations on the body, observing the truth pertaining to the mind, observing the truth pertaining to the contents of the mind. All these four must be experienced by each meditator directly, himself or herself. Just intellectualizing it does not help you. To understand Dhamma intellectually is good because it will give you inspiration, because it will give you guidance, it will make you understand how you should practice, how you should experience, but actually it is your own experience which is going to give result, and this you will understand as we proceed further. In the meantime, now you are working with your respiration, the reality of this moment, be aware of it, work with it, coming, going, as it is, deep, shallow, as it is, touching here, touching there, as it is, the sensation below the nostrils, as it is, from moment to moment, moment to moment, from moment to moment. Try to maintain this continuity of the awareness of the reality. This is your object now. This area of the body, you are working on the body. This area of the body, the reality that is manifested from moment to moment, from moment to moment. You are aware, you are aware, you are aware. Day and night you are aware, except the period when you are in deep sleep. Most of the time you will forget. And your mind will start wandering here and there. You can't help. But as soon as you realize the mind has wandered away, well, bring back. Just accept the fact, mind has wandered away. Don't generate a feeling of disappointment or depression when you find the mind has wandered away. Just accept, mind has wandered away. Now again, let me start. Start again with the breath coming in, going out, coming in, going out, deep, shallow, whatever it is, and the sensation on this area. You are aware of this area, you are aware of the breath coming in, going out, and proceed. You had been working on this, now you will work more seriously, more diligently. Time is very short, and you have come to a very serious course with all the atmosphere around you so serious, everybody is working so seriously, no disturbance of the new students. Make use of it. Make use of it, not obliging anybody else, for your own good, for your own benefit, for your own liberation. To enjoy real peace, real harmony, real happiness. May all of you enjoy real peace, real harmony, real happiness. Bhavata sarva mangalam. Bhavata sarva mangalam. Bhavatu sarva mangalam. Take rest for a few minutes and take rest with awareness, and then come back and start working with awareness.